This is a CNA podcast.
Singapore, like many modern nations, have seen fewer tie the knot and more calling time out on their marriages. Every union begins with the hope of until death do us part. But there's no running away from reality when some relationships turn sour as both sides discover irreconcilable differences. It can be long drawn, with children as casualties as couples fight over assets and custody. But about a month ago, the Ministry of Social and Family Development announced it was exploring a quote-unquote amicable divorce option. Couples can jointly file for dissolution of their marriage, importantly without assigning blame. Now, there have been mixed reactions. Some say it would make marriages meaningless when divorce becomes an easy option. Others say it is about time that acrimony is taken out of alimony agreements. So today, we take a deep dive into the issue of amicable divorces. Is there such a thing? And what are the implications of a no-fault divorce option? This is Heart of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling. It's Thursday, June 10th. With me to talk through this are family lawyer Gloria James Chivetta.
Hi, good morning.
And family counsellor Benny Bong.
Hi, good morning.
Gloria, Benny, thanks for joining us. I want to start by zooming out. Mm-hmm. When you look at divorce rates since 1990, there's been an increase over the last 30 years. Now, in your experience as a family counsellor, as a divorce lawyer, why aren't marriages working out? What's driving more divorces than ever? Why don't we start with you, Gloria?
I've noticed a certain trend. Husband and wife and maybe one or two kids, maybe the marriage is about 10 years of marriage. You'll be looking at parties trying to file for divorce. And another group of people who do tend to file for divorce are the silver years divorces, I would say, because the kids have already gone through the education. They are now matured and independent. And one of the reasons for silver years divorces would be that my duty is done. I'm now taking care of myself and I want to be out of the marriage. Younger couples with the shorter period of marriages between 5 to 10 years, main reason is not compatible. I'm not sure what Benny thinks.
It's interesting because I do also see the same kind of trend, the younger, earlier divorces. But I also see a little bit of an uptick in divorce in older couples. And I have couples who come in and sometimes they're sent to counseling by their adult children. And the children are saying, look, you guys have been married for 30, 40 years. Why do you want to get a divorce now? It's so ridiculous, you know, from the eyes of the children. I'd like to add something to the question that was asked, and I've been asked this several times. Actually, the question should be more in the reverse. How come we're not seeing the same kind of divorce statistics numbers as in other developed countries?
Which is?
We are experiencing a lot of stress. We are experiencing a lot of very mobile, empowered individuals now who say, look, we don't have to stay married because I have to depend on his income. I can afford to live on my own. So why aren't there more divorces than before? One reason, of course, is our culture taboo or traditional taboo around divorce. Some may be religion. And sometimes it may be the court process. You know, you have this minimum 3-year waiting period and this divorce process that says, you know, you got to find fault, nail the bugger at the altar of truth and get it out of him. That makes this whole process difficult and in a way has restrained individuals who may not have the means or not just financial means, but the emotional means to want to carry on a long drawn out battle.
But Gloria, help us unpack this a little bit. I think Benny started to hint at this. On divorce, does blame need to be assigned today on grounds for divorce and the alternative really separation for 3 years?
Yes, you need to cite blame. So if you're looking at a fault-based divorce, the typical fault would be committing adultery. The other party has been unreasonable to cause a breakdown of the marriage. This, I would say, is the particular ground that many people cite when one is filing for divorce and a fault-based divorce. So if you're looking at no-fault divorce, you're looking at 3 years separation and the other party needs to consent, or if you have separated for 4 years. I agree with what Benny has said on the trends and all that. On another issue that I've seen that has been arising is there are some couples who do not wish to have a divorce per se. They're not looking at the end result of having a divorce, so they enter into a deed of separation or they enter into what we call a judicial separation. They basically wait out first once things have been settled or the kids are a little bit mature. Maybe they're in the primary school. That's when the parties do file for divorce. So you do have a few camps as to why divorces are being filed. maybe a little bit more later in the life. You also have this issue of what we call financial independence now as compared to before. Most of the parties initiating for divorce, I noticed the trend, tends to be women.
I think more women now than in the past, but also because women now feel that they are more empowered. They have education, some finances, and also the belief that why should I waste the rest of my life with this relationship? Gloria, if I may ask you, you know, as a family lawyer, it's a very interesting point you made. Mm-hmm. So there is a route, this judicial separation, this 3 years or 4 years, that parties can take to end a marriage without having to show fault. There's a way out. It's not as if there isn't a way out. Are we, at this point in time in our thinking, we are considering opening up no-fault divorce. Are we saying that even with this 3-4 year wait, people are just crying out to say, I don't want to wait anymore. I've had enough. So are we saying that waiting period is just too long, or people who are becoming very impatient? Is that the reason why it's not sufficient to wait out this period?
Just jump in here also. I think the question they're really trying to get at, Benny, is, Gloria, do you think that a long timeout imposed before couples can apply for divorce might turn things around? Because currently there's a 3-year wait, so cool heads and calm hearts might prevail. If so, is the assumption that couples seeking divorce might be acting too rashly and moving too fast? What do you think?
Well, it depends on the situation. There are some parties who feel that for their own mental welfare and well-being, they need to be out of the marriage. There should be an avenue for them to do that, and that is where the fault-based divorce comes in. But on the other hand, there are parties who feel that, look, you know, I'm putting my children's welfare in front of me rather than my own personal well-being. And that said, they feel that it's okay, I want to wait out for 3 years. But on the other hand, if a party feels so trapped in the marriage, they're not going to go for a no-fault basis divorce and wait out for 3 years, go enter into a separation. They'll be looking at ways how to kickstart the divorce process. So there must be a fair balance.
It's very black and white then.
Yes.
Okay, so either if a couple who has come to the conclusion, even if they've spent some time talking and thinking about it, they still need to wait for 3 years if it's somewhat amicable, as opposed to finding a quick resolution by attributing blame, right? Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, that's right.
I want to talk about the impact on children, because a huge majority of divorces does involve children today. What is it about a divorce that negatively affects children? And could you be more specific? Is it the eventual outcome, the process of divorce proceedings, or the home environment when conflict begins? What in your experience is the case, Benny?
I would say it's the home environment. And when we think about children, we need to keep in mind what age group are we looking at? And how long have the children been exposed to the conflict? Sometimes the divorce happens and it's like a surprise for the kids. They thought that they are living in a perfect environment, or they're too wrapped up in their own lives. They didn't even notice the parents are not talking. When it happens after a long period of conflict, sometimes the children are relieved. Sometimes they just want to get away from one party and be with the other. So there's another twist to this idea that it affects all children negatively. There are these other outcomes. But something that we often forget is not just the lead up to the divorce, but also the aftermath. And so when parties have a divorce but are still fighting, there's still a lot of bitterness.
Why are they fighting? Surely they will not be in the same house anymore.
Well, they can fight for different reasons. One may be that I want to get out of this marriage, but I'm not getting the settlement that I want. I'm not getting my fair share. Or I may feel that he's got off too lightly. I wanted to shame her in court, drag her through the mud, but I didn't get the opportunity to. I didn't get the confession that I wanted. Or it could be a party, an applicant who got a divorce, who applied for a divorce, but at the end of the day said, you know, if you ask me, I don't want to be divorced. I would have wanted the marriage I had before, but because of circumstances, it's better for me to get out. So there may be a lot of reasons why parties are still angry, still hurt. If the parents who got the divorce don't manage those emotions are going to trickle down almost in a very acidic, toxic manner to degrade the relationship, that they have with their children and their children with the other parent.
So Benny, I hear you're saying that it's not just about the divorce itself, but that the nature of divorce, separation, when a couple decides to part ways is necessarily somewhat traumatic, and it's really up to the couple to manage that. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, and also the aftermath of the divorce. I've seen many couples who, after the divorce, they haven't healed. They're still wounded. It's almost like having an amputation. They have this phantom limb that they still feel the pain, and they feel that something's missing in their lives.
When parties start off as an acrimonious divorce, what the family justice courts do is to get parties to come for mandatory mediation and counselling. That sort of puts a break to the heated situation, and the courts take control of, let's look at the children's interests, let's see how we're going to manage this situation. And the court looks at starting the whole mediation and counselling process with a family court specialist assigned to each case. So the family specialist would then have a conversation with both the husband and wife. The idea is to try to get a resolution on the issue of custody, who the child lives with, what kind of access are we looking at, and whether parties should be having baby steps towards access, especially when one parent has been quite absent from the marriage or has been feeling very hostile. So you need to understand what the thought process of both parents are. I find that the mediation and counselling works in court. It sort of minimizes the conflict, because from my practice, I don't see many cases going to court as a full-blown contested divorce, not only for the divorce per se, and also for the ancillary issues.
I'm hearing you both say that there are definitely safeguards today that the family court judges have discretion over to help ease the painful process of divorce such that it is less acrimonious, that can have an impact on children. Mm-hmm. Given all that you've discussed so far, does it sound like because divorce can have a negative impact on children, there might actually be cases that make divorce a better option and it is better to ease that process? What do you think, Benny?
My view is that divorce is an outcome that almost all parties do not want to see. Mm. I remember someone saying there's no one marries to want to get a divorce unless you're a gold digger. But you want to marry and you want to have a happy life after that. Because there's this recognition that there's a need for a divorce, then it's how do we manage that? Disappointment is just not enough of a word to cut it, but you know, how do we manage that profound grief and process? The efforts of the court does help. It helps to address the applicant, the defendant's emotions, and that has a trickle-down effect on the children who are also mirroring sometimes the emotions of their parents. So it can be helpful, yeah.
So Gloria, weigh in here. There was a study released earlier this year that children of divorced parents face more negative consequences well into adulthood compared to intact families. Do you think this actually supports the case to make divorce processes a bit simpler and give that option to couples?
I've seen kids having a negative impact, not performing well. Clients have also told me that the school counsellors would have a regular feedback to the parents. So I take the view that there must be steps after divorce care ought to be given for children.
So then I just want to go into what the difference is with this no-fault amicable divorce that the Ministry of Social and Family Development is proposing. What's the difference with this new proposed divorce track from what there's already in place where the family justice courts have the discretion when it comes to uncontested divorce, Gloria?
With this proposal, I would say there are pros and cons. The pros would be minimizing the acrimony, streamlining the process, removing the blame from parties blaming each other for the cause of the breakdown of the marriage. Whereas on the other issue is the balance. It needs an avenue to vent. It's like shutting out this ventilation process. So a fine balance needs to be done. When I'm looking at comparing the jurisdictions between Singapore, Australia, maybe New Zealand, and even the US, they do have a no-fault basis divorce, and parties are encouraged to wait out for at least 1 or 2 years even before filing for divorce. So what we have been doing, and what I believe many other lawyers, my peers and all that have been doing, is we have been focusing on what we call trying to resolve the divorce even before the divorce writ is filed in court. So parties enter into what we call a without prejudice negotiations, enter into collaborative family practice, or maybe engage a mediator to try to resolve the dispute. With that, if you're looking at a category of people who have resolved the dispute, they would then be asking, look, I've already resolved all my issues. We agree that both want to divorce. We agree on the child issues, the financials, the division of assets. Why do I have to now pinpoint blame on the other party if I do not have at least 3 years or 4 years of separation? So that's the sticking point. So that's where MSF is coming from. How do you streamline that? How do you not put the blame on someone when you already have an agreement?
One more question before I get Benny to weigh in. How commonplace are these sort of couples that will benefit from this new arrangement then? How many out of 10 couples seeking divorce fit that profile?
I would say majority of the cases right now have been resolved at the mediation stage, but that's after the filing of the divorce writ and where the parties go through what we call a mandatory mediation and counselling. So if you're looking at the numbers, right up to that stage, it's close to about 70 to 80% of cases have resolved and have gone through an uncontested route. But the pre-read stage, that I do not have the figure, but based on my practice, I would say for every 10 cases, about 5 to 6 cases do get resolved at that stage.
This is very illuminating for me to understand the pre-writ and the writ stage and all that. I'd like to pick up on some words that was used. The word resolve and the word ventilation. When I first encountered the phrase no-fault divorce, it really baffled my mind because sadly, many of the clients that I meet do feel that there's a fault. Whether rightly or in a very skewed manner, they view that there's a fault. I understand the phrase no-fault as the court does not demand that parties establish a fault. So this direction seems to be that let's smoothen out the process a little bit more. And it can be helpful for some, especially one ex-client of mine just told me only recently that some very disadvantaged women, women without the means, feel that they don't have the opportunity to prove their case. They can't hire a PI. Now they can get a divorce because the means, the door has been opened. No fault, as in the court does not demand for this, but it does not address the ventilation. And I've met some clients who, after a divorce process, and they finally got a very difficult divorce after many years, and they still feel that the emotions are not resolved. So let me suggest this. There is a process called the victim impact statement. So without prejudice, guilt and innocence has been established. Maybe penalties have been presented to the guilty party. And then the victim is allowed to make a statement in court and does not impact the sentencing to the guilty party as to how his or her crime has impacted them. And it gives the victim an opportunity to have, in a way, their day in court to say, this is what you have done to me. This is what the divorce means to me. I may have gotten half a flat, but man, this is not what I wanted.
But Benny, a devil's advocate is that the proposal also is for more counselling and mediation to be made available so that both sides can come to a healthy conclusion of their marriage. Ah. Instead, why propose this new thing where it might entrench the plaintiff and defendant sort of dynamic that the move towards no-fault divorce is trying to remove?
Okay, good question, because you're wondering how come this counselor, family counselor, is talking about making this kind of statement. I don't think, as much as I see the benefits of counseling, counseling is not a solution to all these cases. There's a time when you need mediation. There's a time where you need to really have a third party resolve it. So there's a time for counseling. And there's a time also for, even after counseling, to say, I just wanted to tell him. He has heard it before, but I want him to know this is what it means to me. I don't see that as delivering the sucker punch, you know, one more hit. But I feel that it's a statement that can be made in a calm manner, but in a clear manner about what it means.
Right, I see that you're actually proposing different pathways because divorce is so diverse and you want to be able to give people options to find closure to this. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, and that's a fantastic word, closure.
I just want to move into the idea of what the implications are of this no-fault divorce arrangement. Maybe we start with you, Gloria. Do you think that this new arrangement will need to more divorces, since now you don't have to wait 3 years before a divorce can be finalized?
MSF proposal is not to shorten the 3 years.
Yes, you have to wait for 3 years to be married.
Yes, you need to be married for 3 years. So there has been a couple of organizations have mooted that the 3 years wait should be lesser. And there have also been suggestions that instead of waiting out for 3 years of separation to file for divorce, that waiting period should also be shortened. But on the other hand, if you already have an agreement to the divorce terms, coming back to the main question would then be, why should I be listed as a plaintiff or why should I be listed as a defendant? Can we just file the divorce paper saying that A and B have agreed to dissolve the marriage and we have already arrived at the terms of settlement and this is the terms of the settlement without citing any fault? So to move to that, I would say it will work very well if parties been married for a few years and they have kids. It should not apply to girls that are childless in the marriage, and especially certain situation, it might be drawing things and giving parties ideas to what we call the scam marriages. You might also have situations where, you know, both parties, you know, both singles agree to marry and buy a HDB flat for the end result of each having a divorce and each getting a HDB flat at the end of the day. If you want to streamline the process, make it applicable to parties who have kids, because you want to take the acrimony out of the divorce. You want to ensure the parties continue to co-parent with the children, continue to ensure that they comply with the divorce court order terms that they have agreed to, not coming back to court to open the door and asking for variation and all that.
I just want to play devil's advocate here. Are you saying that you think if there's a no-fault divorce route that is easier for some, especially those with no children, that it increases the chances of divorce and cheapens marriage?
Yes, that's an element of fear.
I would agree with that too.
Why?
Let me say that I agree that there would probably be an increase in the number of divorces because it does facilitate that route. It does open it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I would add one more thought to this, that if parties had come to, and even if just one party had come to the point where they say, I want out of the marriage, the marriage has already ended. It only needs the court to declare the contract void or rescind. What we are trying to do with all this establishing fault, having 3 years, is to establish some degree of fairness and maybe hopefully try to prevent marriages from falling apart. But the move towards offering counseling at the pre-divorce period, I think that's a great move. That's the right move to help parties find solutions. But to try to make it more complicated is bolting the door after the horse has left the barn. You know, we need to recognize for many couples, the marriage has ended a long time ago. They haven't found a way of resolving it. Maybe they've just been trying to find how to get out of a difficult situation.
Or what is the right time to file for divorce?
That's right. We should be prepared, sadly, to see more marriages coming to an end.
Just one more devil's advocate. Gloria, why only allow couples with children that route? Why not let couples without children that option as well? Because ultimately, isn't staying in a marriage the private decision of two individuals? Why introduce barriers?
I would say that it helps to streamline and protect the sanity of marriage. So if there are no kids involved, you're not going to have children issues causing a trauma to the kids and all that. And it was just a marriage where both parties are childless marriage. But then I lean towards the fact that the sanity of marriage ought to be upheld and parties will need to go through the normal process, which is the requirements of satisfying the ground for divorce and either parties entering into what we call a no-fault basis divorce, having been separated for more than 3 years and then filing it as an uncontested basis. I'm not sure whether Benny shares my view.
When there are children involved, I think certainly more support, more help should be given. When you're talking about couples who are childless and who recognize that basically a marriage is a contract between two parties. And if one party refuses to stay true to the contract ends all but through the legal process. We need to recognize that one party at least don't want to continue in this contract.
Last question, just to round off, just really taking a step back and looking at divorce and marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that tackling divorce rates really is more about building stronger marriages? And in that context, would you both encourage people to think wait, even marry later?
If you're really serious about marriage, then marriage shouldn't be just something that people book at ROM and book some photographer and take a picture and have a nice meal. They should go through a marriage preparation because it's a serious, difficult route decision that they're making. And if people can go into that with a fair amount of preparation, emotional, psychological, I think that's a move in the right direction to acknowledge the importance, the sanctity of the marriage, the importance of this contract and commitment that you're making. So it starts with that.
There are people who in other countries who decide to cohabit first rather than go through a pre-marital counselling or engagement course.
So test the waters first.
Yeah, this is not encouraging our culture and because we tend to be more conservative. So perhaps if they are ready and a little bit more mature, then you can avoid the trend where people marrying young are divorcing early.
Gloria, Benny, thanks for coming on our show to talk about marriage, divorce, and the implications of a no-fault option. This has been Part of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling. Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer, were working hard behind the scenes for this episode as well.